Buried is produced and distributed by KETR.org and is presented uninterrupted thanks to the support of its fans and listeners. Become a supporter today when you visit KETR.org and click donate.
Hello?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going.
The Oklahoma police called me today, and they said that they recorded over that tape.
What?
Yeah, because they said that they didn't need it because it's Hunt County has possession over it, you know? It's their case.
All right, let's start over on that.
So, Cody's interview was in Oklahoma, you know?
Right.
And so, I thought that we could just ask them, the police there, for their copy of it, of the tape.
Right.
Because, as like a way to get around Hunt County, you know? So, I filed like an official request and whatever. Anyway, this lady from there called me today and said that their copy of it doesn't exist because they just record over them like every 90 days or something.
Wow. Did Hunt County get a copy, I wonder?
Yeah. She said that they have the original one, so it's there.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll talk to my boss and see what he wants to do about when and how to contact
him. In November 2016, Carrie Mae Parker's ex-boyfriend faced questions from a Hunt County detective for the first time ever. The detective traveled to the town of Tishomingo, Oklahoma, to see if he could squeeze something out of Cody after all these years. At one point in the interview, the detective accused Cody of murdering and burying Carrie on his family's property, building on years-old rumors and accusations by people who knew Cody, and even one who lived on that same property after Carrie disappeared. Obviously, I tried to get a hold of that audio. I mean, really tried. It's the third of three versions Cody has given of events at a party that Carrie attended in a place called Hawk Cove, possibly right before she disappeared. If you've been following this podcast since the beginning, you've already heard the first two versions. If not, Episode 4 features a recording of Cody recounting to Carrie's son Brian many of the rumors his family had already heard. In Episode 5, Cody's ex-girlfriend Janice offers a generally consistent version about a mysterious woman known only as Cactus and what happened after Carrie arrived. This episode is where I wanted you to hear the third and most important account, Cody's interview with an actual detective. But Hunt County refused to give us a copy, and the Tishomingo Police Department destroyed theirs. Of course, I invited the detective who interviewed Cody, Jeff Haynes, to come and talk to us in the studio about the case in general, but my messages and calls went unreturned for a year, and not just about that invitation. Even basic questions like what email address or phone number to provide to listeners who might have tips for the sheriff's office, couldn't even get that. But I got something else, and I think it's a worthy substitute for the audio file. It's a summary of Haynes' interview with Cody, start to finish, along with the detective's first-person observations. In this episode, we're going to hear everything Cody said about the party that Haynes considered important enough to document. We're going to find out what it could mean for the timeline of Carrie's case. And we're going to do that by trying something a little unorthodox. I consulted my friend Nick, who has experience doing voiceover work abroad. He offered to recreate Haynes' transcript in an audio format, so we could use it in the podcast. We wanted to make it as neutral as possible, but to maintain any emphasis in the language either Cody or Haynes used in the transcript.
I, Sergeant Jeff Haynes, was contacted by Sheriff Meeks regarding the case and stated that he received an email informing him that Cody Songer was currently living in Tishomingo, Oklahoma, and wanted to know why he hadn't been interviewed.
I think he did a great job, and I'm excited to finally bring in the Sheriff's Office's perspective to Buried. I regret that we had to do it for them, but I'm glad it's finally here. I'm hoping that by switching between the two of us, it'll clarify what exactly Cody told Haynes about the party, at least according to the summary. We're leaving those parts intact, only limited editing for clarity. Let's get to it.
I asked Mr. Songer if he knew why I wanted to talk to him, and he replied, "I know exactly why you're here. You're here about Carrie Parker." Mr. Songer stated that he thought it had been about 2 months later that he told Carrie Parker that the relationship wasn't going to work out, and they separated. Mr. Songer stated, Carrie Parker began stalking him and followed him to a party.
From KETR Public Radio in Northeast Texas, I'm George Hale and this is Buried, an investigative series and podcast about the 1991 disappearance of Carrie Mae Parker and about her ex-boyfriend's interview with a Texas detective during a visit to Tishomingo, Oklahoma. K- Carrie Mae Parker has been missing since March 17th, 1991, St. Patrick's Day. At least, that's the official version. Well, it's official according to the incomplete records kept by the Terrell Police Department. The Hunt County Sheriff's Office accidentally wrote her birthday in the missing since box when they finally took a report in 2010. It's an obviously false entry that has remained uncorrected years after the family filed the report, which makes you feel sort of embarrassed for them when they issue a press release marking the wrong anniversary. They also spelled her name wrong in the last update they released, which was mindlessly passed along by local media until her family started calling them out online. Each of these little errors might seem minor on their own, but I'm bringing them up collectively because in a missing person case, the date that person was last seen alive is absolutely critical. It's how you determine where to start looking, for one thing. So for the Terrell Police Department to record that she's been missing since March 1991, and for Hunt County to believe, well, we don't even really know what they believe, but let's go with May 12th, her birthday. Anyway, for them to operate according to these two very different dates is problematic. So I've more or less spent the last year of my life trying to find out if Terrell's date is correct. That's March 17th. I haven't spent much time on Hunt County's date because, you know. Plus, March 17th is the one Carrie's family has been using for the past 27 years. I doubt that came from nothing. I just can't pinpoint exactly what it does come from, and nobody else can say that with certainty. This episode isn't about a date, per se, but keep it in the back of your mind while we look for answers about a party that could have happened that night. Possibly in a place called Hawk Cove near Lake Tawakoni in Hunt County. I want to know what happened there, of course, but I really want to know when it happened. And I'm starting to think it's time to propose a different date and throw out March 17th, 1991 altogether. There's just nothing to back it up, but there is something to back up a date a month before, in February. And I think that by studying this party in detail for the past three episodes, we can find indications it didn't occur as close to March 1991 as many believe. One way to time it is that Carrie and Cody broke up not long before she went missing, according to Cody as well as Carrie's sister Patricia. Cody says they lived in several places before he went to prison, and then off Highway 429 renting from a guy everybody called Lucky. Patricia also remembers them getting back together, at least briefly, after prison. And she remembers seeing them together the summer before Carrie vanished.
In 1990, I had flew down from Houston to see my daughter in Box Springs. Mm-hmm. And Carrie and Cody were there. Now, I know that Cody did a really tiny stint in prison in 1990. I don't remember if it was from, maybe it was from somewhere in January to June or something. I mean, it wasn't very long because he was there on my daughter's birthday with my sister in 1990.
What was your daughter's birthday?
That's July 28th. July. Yeah, July. So it was, yes, they were both there.
Carrie's sister gave me a photo of the three of them from that day. Patricia and Carrie are sticking their tongues out toward the camera. Cody just stares at it coldly. All the photos I mentioned in this podcast are eventually posted to Instagram, by the way. The account is buried.radio, and we keep it pretty current. Anyway, one of the first things when I started reporting on this case was to find out if Cody was in custody in the months before or after Carrie's disappearance. I found one April 1989 arrest in the Dallas suburb of Richardson. Cody got busted for amphetamines after stumbling around at a Jack in the Box. Here's a portion of the cop's report narrative from that incident. Quote, "He made statements that were irrational and out of context to the questions the officer asked. He couldn't explain why he was in Richardson. He said he lived in Quinlan. It was officer's opinion that Songer was intoxicated, to the degree he may be a danger to himself or others. Songer had stated he had taken some crystal. He was arrested for public intoxication and transported to Richardson Police Department. During the personal property inventory, a plastic baggie containing a white and yellowish powder was located in Songer's front pocket. A court record shows that Cody's parents got him out 2 days later. On April 13th, the city filed charges for possession of amphetamines. He was convicted in June and received 10 years probation. But back in April, and back in the Lake Tawakoni area, the Van Zandt County Sheriff's Office also arrested Cody for unauthorized use of a vehicle. He was released the next month after getting 5 years probation. That ended on January 2nd of 1990, when he was arrested for violating probation. But that five-year sentence went fast. Cody somehow got out on March 13th of the same year. Texas had been dealing with the prison overcrowding crisis in the late 1980s and early 1990s. The Van Zandt Sheriff's Office notes that Hunt County had arrested Cody on October 12, 1988. The charge isn't clear, and Hunt County's records don't show it. Either way, Cody's release record matches Patricia's memory about seeing him in July, along with that photograph. It appears that he'd been out of jail since March and still dating Carrie all that time. Patricia believes they split up the next winter, although Cody told Haynes it was more like 2 months after his release. But if they were still a couple at the birthday party that year, someone's recollection about when they broke up is off. Cody's criminal history continues for decades, and many are drug charges. There are also a few domestic charges in Oklahoma in more recent years. I'm still in the process of getting some of those records. The Tishomingo Police Department says it'll take more time to track everything down. But a criminal records check we conducted with the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation does list misdemeanor charges of domestic assault and battery in the last 10 years. Anyway, Patricia didn't know about any domestic charges from back when Carrie was around either. But she did hear the same story I did from her brother Glenn about the last time he saw his sister.
I don't think that it was, but my brother told me that before he went, because my brother had went to California before she, right before she went missing, and with his wife at the time. Her name was Renee. And he said that he had ran into Carrie. He saw Carrie sitting at the Easy Mart in Quinlan. And she was crying. And so they stopped to see, you know, what was going on. And Carrie was upset. And she said that her and Cody had gotten into an argument. And that they were going down the road. I guess she had kicked his windshield from inside the truck, you know. Because my sister was like, you give her a mean look and she wanted to whoop your ass, basically. So she had kicked his windshield or something other, and he's going 60, 65 miles down the road or something other and tried to push her out. And that's why she was crying. That's what she told my brother. But she didn't file any charges or anything against him that I'm aware of.
That story doesn't come up in Haynes' interview. But Cody does tell him about a different altercation with Carrie in a place called Hawk Cove. Here's Nick reading from Haynes' report.
Cody Songer stated that he was hanging out after the breakup with a guy named Todd Langford. Mr. Songer stated there was a female at the party that everyone knew as Cactus, who he described as, quote, Indian. Mr. Songer stated that he was at a party in what is now known as Hawk Cove at a trailer home by the old grocery store, and it was him, Jim Wilburn, some guy with the last name of Jones, and he thought the first names were either Jim or John, but he could not recall.
So it's him, Jim Wilburn, some guy with the last name of Jones, and he thought the first names were either Jim or John, but he could not recall. And of course, Cactus. Cody gives Haynes a slightly different list of people who were at the party, if you're keeping track between this interview and the one he gave Brian that we discussed in episode 4. Cody tells Brian that Jim's wife was also at the party, but he leaves her out here. He also doesn't mention the guy with the last name of Jones, first name maybe Jim or John. That might be the guy who was always pulling on his mustache, whose name he couldn't remember when he spoke to Brian. He never forgets Cactus, though. She's in every version I've ever heard. I assume at least partly because of what happened when Carrie arrived.
Mr. Songer stated that while they were all partying, Carrie Parker showed up, and Todd Langford told him that she didn't need to be there, and he told Todd that it wasn't a problem, that he had no beef with her. Mr. Songer stated that everyone continued to drink and dance, and that he danced with both Cactus and Carrie Parker. Mr. Songer stated that Carrie Parker had a couple of drinks, and came over to him and made a statement to the effect that he wanted to sleep with Cactus. Mr. Songer stated that he told Carrie Parker that not only did he want to sleep with Cactus, but he was going to that night. Mr. Songer stated that Carrie Parker threw a drink in his face. Mr. Songer stated that Todd Langford got mad about it, and Jim Wilburn stepped in and escorted Carrie Parker outside, and was outside with her for about 30 minutes before he came back inside. Mr. Songer stated that Jim Wilburn told everyone that he was going down the road with Carrie Parker and he would be back later. Mr. Songer stated that Jim Wilburn returned to the party and Carrie Parker got into her car and left. I asked what kind of car Carrie Parker drove, and he stated a brown Chevy Camaro. That was the last time he seen Carrie Parker.
I'm going to focus more on Carrie's car in future episodes, because it's just a mess and difficult to verify certain things due to Carrie being legally alive. But the important thing to keep in mind for now is that Carrie bought a different car in early 1991, very soon before she disappeared. It was a 1980 bluish-gray Buick Skylark. Before the Buick, she had a brown Chevy Camaro. Most people tend to remember the Camaro because it's a Camaro, not a Buick, but also because the amount of time people saw her driving the Buick was only like 2 or 3 months. If Cody's memory of her car and the party is accurate, that means it might have been sooner than March 1991, and that makes it and the fight with Cody seem a lot less relevant to her disappearance, which is the question I've been trying to answer for the past two episodes. When did this party even occur? Until Cody's conversation with Haynes and mention of the Camaro, it was ambiguous. But if Carrie was driving the Camaro that night, the party didn't happen the night she disappeared, because Carrie disappeared in her Buick, which still hasn't been recovered. I'd asked Jim, the one Cody said she drove off with for a while after their fight, but he died soon after, so that's not an option. The detective asked Cody about Todd Langford, his best friend at the time. Cody says that he doesn't know how to reach Todd anymore, but he thinks he's alive.
Mr. Songer stated that it wasn't long after this party that Jim Wilburn was killed in a car wreck, but as far as he knew, Todd Langford was still alive.
I searched for Todd for months after reading Cody's interview. This is the same guy who Glenn remembers Cody screaming at for bringing up Carrie's name when they live next door to each other. Glenn says Cody told Todd not to mention Carrie, because the only person who knows what happened to her is Jim, and Jim's dead. Haynes wouldn't know about this, though, because he's never interviewed Glenn. In fact, Glenn says not one police officer has ever interviewed him about his missing sister. Which seems like a big oversight, because she and Glenn ran in the same circles and had a lot of the same friends. Glenn learned about the party a decade sooner than the detective, for example.
Mr. Songer stated that was the last he had seen of her. Mr. Songer repeated that the last time he seen Carrie Parker was when she left from the party. Mr. Songer stated that I could ask Cactus, Todd, or Jones, of which two of those names was either a street name and or last name only, with no additional identifiers. Mr. Songer further stated that he had nothing to do with her being missing, and that he washed his hands of her when he moved out, and the last time he seen Carrie Parker was when she left the party. Mr. Songer repeated the same statement about the last time he seen Carrie Parker was at the party.
I think it's easy to see why anyone's mind would make the connection with Jim Wilburn, the host of the party in Hawk Cove and the one who drove off with Carrie, but it's not clear it's the same Jim.
I asked if Jim acted strange when he returned to the party. Mr. Songer stated that he appeared fine and they just had a normal conversation. And when they got back, Carrie had left the party and they all went on with their night and he hung out with Cactus. I asked again if he knew the real name for Cactus, and he stated that the only thing he knew was that he heard she got married and moved up north somewhere.
Before Carrie dated Cody, she was in a long-term relationship with a man named Leonard Good, who was the father of Carrie's second child, Brandy. Patricia put me in touch with Leonard's aunt, Kathy, who also says she was close to Carrie. Leonard died in Dallas the same year Carrie disappeared. The family is largely split on what they believe happened to Leonard, and we're working on putting together some new information about that. Kathy told me that Carrie was trying to get away from Cody when she disappeared, which is the exact opposite of what Cody describes during his interview.
Hey, this is George Hale. I got your number from Patricia.
Yes.
Did she tell you what I'm doing?
Mm-hmm.
She said that you knew Carrie, is that right?
Yeah, I did.
Did you know her well?
We were getting pretty close when she disappeared. I know her because she was dating my nephew, Leonard.
Did you ever think you knew what happened to her?
I have heard a lot of rumors about, you know, she just disappeared, she did this, she did that. No, it didn't make sense because she lived and breathed for her kids. It didn't make sense that she'd just walk away. And
anytime.
From the rumors I've heard, it had something to do with her boyfriend at the time, Cody. He was bad news. And
uh-huh.
I told her that many times, and she knew. She was trying to get her life right so she could get away.
From him?
Yeah.
But she broke up with him before anyway, right?
Right, exactly. But you know how things go where guys don't leave girls alone. He was constantly wanting to get back with her and, you know, I love you and this song and dance stuff he did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he was not a nice person back then. I don't know what he's like now. I never talked to him, but...
I don't think a lot of people know this because they haven't announced it, but he was interviewed by the police about a year ago.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting to me. After 26 years, they decided to...
Yeah, why do it now?
He said, though, in this interview that it was her who was sort of stalking him.
That's not true. No.
He said that she was, like, calling him at work, calling, you know.
No. She was done. She told him, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done. And he kept trying to get her in trouble with the drugs and all that other stuff, so.
What do you mean in trouble?
He was in trouble for drugs at the time, okay? And he was trying to blame it on her and Leonard, but it was all him. And.
Oh.
Right before she disappeared and Leonard died, he made some kind of deal with the police. He would never tell anybody what happened, and the police wouldn't tell. Of course, they can't. But it was just a little funny. Shortly before she disappeared.
There's some kind of deal with the police?
Yeah, he told everybody that he knew that he'd made a deal with the police and that he was going to go to jail for a little while. I think he said a year or two.
Uh-huh.
And that when he got done, it would be all over. And that's what he said.
Do you have any idea which police those were?
All I know is he was talking to Tawakoni, and then Quinlan got involved. I don't know what happened. I wasn't in on that.
It was Tawakoni first?
Yeah, he dealt with Tawakoni Police Department first.
So I've been looking in the wrong neighborhood, I think.
Well, they're all pretty well connected down there. And back then, they were not a good police department. Back then, they were all taking bribes and doing drugs. And I mean, it was just right there in front of your face. They'd be out there smoking a joint, and nobody cared.
After Kathy mentioned Cody's supposed deal, I started looking more closely at his arrest from right after that time period. And she's right. In 1991, Cody got arrested for burglary in April and had his probation revoked 2 months later.
But yeah, Carrie and I were getting to be really close. I love that girl. She mm-hmm. was something.
She sounds pretty cool.
She wasn't like anybody else that I'd ever met. She was a good kid, and she was trying to get her life right. And she told me, I think, God, probably 2 or 3 weeks before she disappeared, that if anything happened to her, to please take care of her kids. She was scared.
Of Cody?
I don't know. She wouldn't tell me for sure who it was. She just said that she was scared. And I mean, you could tell when she walked up and she'd talk to me and she'd hug me. And you could just tell.
Man.
I know. And
so
it kills me every day that I don't know where she's at. I mean, I have a clue. I have a pretty good inkling that the property that they used to own, where they had the septic tank company.
Uh-huh.
We've heard rumors all through the years that he buried her in her car. There was a big hole there when she disappeared. And then it was covered up.
Have you ever heard about this party in Hawk Cove?
I heard about a party, but I don't know anything about it.
I don't really either. The one thing Cody swears this is the last time he saw her. Says that he was dancing with somebody named Cactus. You ever heard that name?
I've heard the name, but it's been years ago.
I can't figure out who she is. Yeah, I'll figure that out eventually.
Cody hung out with some really sketchy, scary people.
Yeah.
Really bad people.
I mean, all these people sound pretty scary, you know, like to me, you know?
Scary
like,
was the sanest one. The sanest person in
yeah.
the room.
Yeah.
She had the most mind. She could work it, you know, she knew what she was doing. They yeah. were all nuts. I did not like Cody from the day I met him. He was something. I haven't figured out what yet, but.
So, have you ever heard of this conspiracy theory explanation with, like.
I heard brief rumors about it, but I don't think so. I think it's all tied in with Cody.
It's all seems very overcomplicated when.
Yeah, they're spinning a yarn to try to get your attention away from where it needs to go. And that's what I thought when all those rumors started popping up.
I wonder how you can ever find out about that deal with Cody. I've never heard that, by the way.
She's the one that told me about it, and then he told me about it because I asked him one day what the deal was about, you know, just trying to be nosy.
Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't tell me. He just said, I made a deal.
Did you ask him before Carrie went missing?
Yeah.
Did you ever see him after she went missing?
No. He wouldn't come around me after.
Cody also says that this last time he saw her was at the party, and the last thing she ever did was threw a drink in his face.
I mean, he probably deserved it. I'm sure he deserved a lot worse. I'm glad somebody's finally looking into it.
Yeah, it's really crazy that no one really seems
no
to.
One.
Is there a reason for this? Like it's.
I don't know. That's another theory I had. Is she in police protection? Did something happen?
See, this is a question I have too, because. It seems like people like me, like right now, like people like me, you know, have gotten involved for brief periods of time and then completely disappeared.
Right.
You know? And that makes me wonder, like, did they find out, like, the truth? Like,
did they find out something? Right, exactly.
Yeah. But, like,
and
something
that question.
Like that she doesn't want, you know what I mean? She's there and doesn't want people to know, you know what I mean? Or something, like, I don't know.
It just seems like, though, if she went into witness protection, she would have took her kids.
Yeah, that's the thing that doesn't make any sense.
Mm-mm. Not at all.
But it is interesting, though, that, like, I don't know, days before she went missing, she was telling people like you, or weeks before, that she was scared
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah, she was. She was terrified of something. And I told her sister and the kids that, you know, but I don't know what. She wouldn't tell me.
Carrie's daughter, Brandy, didn't know much about Haynes' trip to Tishomingo. But she seemed surprised when I told her that a lot of the things Cody had told the detective were similar to stories that her uncle and grandfather had told her when she was a teenager.
The last time she's ever seen or heard from was at work, right? In Terrell? Is that what people thought?
Officially, like, that's the like, official last known whereabouts for her was at her workplace.
Mm-hmm.
But there were rumors that she was at a party.
Yeah.
And that was the last place that she was seen. And that rumor has come from multiple people. And I will say that there have been so many rumors from different people about her disappearance that it's hard to keep up, as yeah. you probably began to gather.
I'm gathering, yeah. I don't know. There's been some things they've done, obviously, like big things recently. I don't know if you know.
I don't know anything about it. I've
tried to start. They've done something really big, according to some papers I have. On November 30th last year, they traveled to Oklahoma and interviewed Cody.
They interviewed him, but I don't know anything about that interview or how it went.
I have the transcript if you're interested.
Definitely.
Yeah, okay. I can make you a copy and send it too. I think one important development then, if anything from this, and this is it, is that he talks about the party and that being the last time he saw her. So it seems to maybe confirm some of those rumors.
Okay. Oh, wow. Well, this is...
Yeah, that's not all him, though, but most of it is, I think.
Well, I haven't seen any of this. Well, I'll give that back to you. I probably would want to give it more than just a skim through, and if I get started, I'll just be engulfed in it.
Yeah. You probably have heard most of these things. He obviously doesn't admit doing anything or anything like that.
I wonder if he's still on drugs.
I got the impression that he's at least been in trouble with the law, so...
Oh, he's got quite a record.
Yeah, so, I think she did.
I think that he knows what happened to her. I believe that strongly. And I don't... I'm not accusing him of anything.
I asked Mr. Songer if he struck Carrie Parker when she threw the drink in his face, and he immediately replied, nope. Mr. Songer stated that they were only drinking and there were no drugs at that party. Mr. Songer corrected himself and stated there were no drugs there as far as he knew, and then added that Carrie Parker didn't stay there long enough to do any drugs. I then confronted Mr. Songer that based on his statements, he couldn't remember the name of the girl he called Cactus, and he couldn't recall the first name of the guy he knew as Jones, but he was certain that there were no drugs at the party.
Haynes takes a harder line as the interview progresses and starts asking Cody pointed questions about why he remembers some details but forgets other stuff, such as the real names of living people who could verify that any of these events occurred. Haynes also asks Cody if he hit Carrie after the drink incident. Haynes also asks if there are drugs at the party. This is important to Brandy and Brian because Brian says he remembers his grandfather's explanation about Cody and Carrie being way over their heads with a group of dealers that have been linked to law enforcement and other powerful institutions in the Lake Tawakoni area. We'll go deeper into these questions, but I'm only mentioning them now because Howard believed the party was connected to the drug deal or the repercussions of one that went wrong.
I've been told that, but when you grow up and that's your life, you think that's normal.
Yeah.
Although it's not.
One day about 6 months after Haynes met Cody, I met up with Brian at his church in Will's Point, and we went over the interview. He explained the connections to the area of town where these deals were going down, between an area with a tire shop and a store where Glenn found Carrie crying.
Or stole some uncut cocaine, and my grandfather said it was $10,000 worth of uncut cocaine, and that it was their lives that were going to have to pay for it because they got it as a borrow. And so I don't know if that, and that's the reason that my grandfather said that Cody did it to save his own tail, because she was going to go rat him out. And apparently, like, at the time he went to Huntsville or went to, you know, prison for a period of time, and so after he got out, it was whenever they were going to try to pretty much take care of them, is what he said.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I remember that I heard you say that to Cody on the phone.
Right, right.
And so that's what you're referring to, obviously.
Yes. And again, that's what my grandfather had told me. And I'm like I said, I'm trying to just remember everything.
Yeah. No, I should have asked about that too, because I forgot to ask. But yeah, like, and she said it was some cartel or something like that. Like,
right. Apparently, what they were trying to say or put it all together was that there was like that judge and the constable and the police officer, whoever, that they were all, you know, working for the cartel as far as bringing the drugs in, but apparently there was a lot of drug deals that happened behind Easy Mart around that time period. Mm-hmm. So as far as I know, they got the drugs and that it was a front, and that whenever the money didn't come back, it was supposed to be their lives pay the example. So
what your aunt said too is like, every story, like everything, it always comes back in some way to Cody.
Yes. You know,
that's like the one thing that always
the
stays.
That,
yeah, yes. The Cody is floating around here. You know,
he's got the truth.
Yeah.
And he's just—I don't know—he's probably gonna hang on to it till he dies. I mean, that's probably one of those things he takes to the grave. I mean, now he's already lived with it for almost 30 years. I mean,
yeah. Why would he just all of a sudden?
Right. Why would he grow a conscience now?
She walked out that door, perfectly happy, but pissed off at me, and threw a drink in my face. That was the last I seen Carrie Parker. Todd was standing there.
In the interview, Haynes asked Cody repeatedly about when he last saw Carrie, and the answer is always the same, when she left. It then escalates to Haynes accusing Cody of murdering Carrie, but he also backs off that accusation. In the last response to a question about the party, Cody is being so careful with his words that he even clarifies how many drinks Carrie had if you subtract the spilled contents.
I then stated that according to him, he talked to her after the party, but Mr. Songer corrected me, stating that Carrie Parker had called the business asking for him, and when he was never there, she showed up at the party and they talked. Mr. Songer stated that he had no idea what happened to her or who would have been involved, and the last time he seen her was when she was driving away from the party. Mr. Songer stated that she was at the party and had a couple of mixed drinks, and that she didn't finish the second one because she threw it in his face.
Well, that's it. I think we've just about covered everything anyone remembers Cody saying about the party in Hawk Cove. And at no point did we really establish that the party happened on March 17th, 1991. Remember, that's the date Carrie supposedly went missing. It's in the report Patricia filed in July 1991 with the Terrell Police Department, and it's all over her missing person posters from the year she finally got reported. And yet, nobody is really sure where it comes from. But it matters a lot, not just to me. The last time anybody saw Carrie, she was having a huge fight with Cody. So it would matter even doubly so if that fight happened months earlier, and she was fine up until finally disappearing. At least for Cody's sake and his reputation, it seems like finding out the truth about that date is a worthy endeavor. After all, the story isn't about Cody. It's important to withhold judgment about him until we have all the facts. As for when the party happened, that's far from resolved. The truth is that the date Carrie is officially listed missing, March 17th, 1991, St. Patrick's Day, cannot be verified. I don't personally have a reason to doubt what the family is telling me, and I'm sure they'd know better than anyone. But if we're supposed to be detached and relying solely on evidence, there isn't any. There's no surviving paperwork showing she was at work that day. There's no missing person report in the constable's office. So we have to go off her father's memories, or Brian's birthday, or Patricia's report to Terrell months later. But there's no hook to March 1991 for the party in Hawk Cove. I think we should stop linking it to the night of Carrie's disappearance, especially if what Cody says about her Camaro being there is true. Carrie didn't go missing in her Camaro. She went missing in a 1980 Buick. But there's another date we can be sure of, and it definitely places her in Hunt County. And before we end this three-part series about the party, I want to tell you something I can prove, because I think it could explain a lot about a certain law enforcement agency's refusal to cooperate with this podcast, while so many other former and current police officers have offered to help. The date is from a photograph I got in the mail several months after starting all this. It's of Carrie Mae Parker on February 21st, 1991. As far as I can tell, it's the last photo of her ever taken. It's actually two photos, nearly identical, photocopied onto the top third of a letter-sized page folded into a regular envelope. It's black and white, but you can still tell that her cheeks are bright and her eyes are puffy, like maybe she's been crying or possibly on something. It's hard to say exactly. I can't quite put my finger on it, but she just looks not right. She's facing forward, eyes on the camera, and holding a black sign with four words printed across: Hunt County Sheriff's Department. And that's because the last time anybody can say with certainty that Carrie Mae Parker was seen alive, she wasn't working the night shift at a factory or throwing drinks at Cody's face during a party. She was in jail. And not just any jail. She was in Hunt County Jail. She was in custody of the law enforcement agency that should have been investigating her disappearance since 1991 and refuses to talk about her now. Buried is produced by Emma Anderson and me. Its executive producer is Jared Knight. Brad Davis composed the original theme music. Podcast cover art is by Crystal Sid. Nick Gordon lent his voice for this episode. Thanks, man. And our photographer is Brittany Greider. Her striking photos of the places featured on this podcast are posted on our Instagram account, which is buried.radio. They're also on Facebook and Twitter. And our email address is buried@ketr.org. Special thanks to Laura Kinnemer, Christy Roundtree, Jeffrey L. Moore, and Rhonda McKeehan. Thanks also to the Public Information Officer at the Rockwall County Sheriff's Office. And thanks again to Daniel W. Ray and Susan Jin. This podcast is a production of member-supported 88.9 FM in Commerce, Texas. To support it and other programming, go online to ketr.org and click the donate button. And thanks.